Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the Mr. Beacon podcast. It's great to have you here. It's been a while since we've done one of these shows. We've taken a break. Today, we're going to be talking about IoT infrastructure, the gateways that connect these trillions of things that we expect to go online over the next few years, and the way it's managed. And these are the kind of details that really become important when you start to deploy at scale. And so I'm really pleased to have Steve Goretta of Rigado. And we've had Rigado on the podcast before, but things have moved on a lot since that episode. So it's time for an update. This is episode 199 of the Mr. Beacon podcast. So we're coming up for the 200 episode. If you have any other subjects that you want to see covered, if you have companies that you think we should be talking to, then let me know. We're here to share information and to learn and to have fun in these conversations. And this is a conversation that was great. Steve and I get into strategy, what's happening in IoT. We do a thorough explanation of the Rigado offering, and we look at where it fits and what the use cases are. So it's a good one. Enjoy it. The Mr. Beacon Ambient IoT podcast is sponsored by Wiliot, bringing intelligence to every single thing. Steve, welcome to the Mr. Beacon podcast. It's great to have you on.
Thanks for having me, Steve. I'm looking forward to this. Really enjoyed listening to episodes before me, and always welcome a conversation like this.
Well, you may have even heard your colleague on the show. I don't know how long ago it was, probably 2 or 3 years ago, I guess. So I'm pleased to have Rigado back on. Full disclosure, Rigado and Wiliot are working together, being deployed as we speak in a very large retailer. But we started talking before there was any partnership. And I think what you're doing is super interesting. This whole business of how do you manage very large networks of IoT infrastructure is really critical as we scale from the Internet of Expensive Things to the Internet of Everything to ambient IoT. I think you guys are really smart. You found a very interesting niche. And you have a really interesting strategy, interesting product. So let's dive into it and tell us, you know, what's today's pitch on what you do?
Sure. So Rigado provides a connectivity solution in the form of software and hardware in some cases that helps connect all these millions, billions, someday trillions of endpoints in IoT to the cloud, and also makes that manageable. We like to think that we're making IoT more like an IT service, you know, an IT managed service, just like you would have for Wi-Fi and other connectivity applications. IoT, as you know, has been kind of the Wild West with not enough standards and, you know, a lot of implementations that, you know, may have security vulnerabilities or might not scale. They sort of stall out at the concept phase. And we like to bring this layer of management and connectivity flexibility so that not only do the solutions work, but they're sort of future-proof for additional use cases in the future that customers might want.
Excellent. Well, there's a lot to unpack there. I would love to talk a bit about that whole standards question and the way the management frameworks are going generally. What do you see in that landscape? We've got giants like Cisco with Spaces who are moving in this direction. And you know where you fit in and where you see the industry going. But let's make sure we do a thorough update, a review of the offering. And I was interested in the point you made, the fact that you have a hardware solution, but it's not always there. It's also a software solution. Can you, why right. would you sometimes have your hardware? Why not other times?
We like to talk about unified networks, unified IoT networks, meaning you can have multiple types of endpoint sensors, electronic shelf labels, different devices that are all running in one common network infrastructure. And in some cases, that means a dedicated gateway, an IoT gateway. In our case, we work a lot in Bluetooth low energy, so we have Bluetooth gateways that customers use. But more and more, we're seeing customers want to leverage existing network infrastructure that might already have a Bluetooth radio or have some other IoT interface that they want to take advantage of. And really, every implementation is different. Even within a customer, in some sites, they might have Wi-Fi access points that can run our software in a container and facilitate all these capabilities. In other cases, they might not have something or they need something new that's a dedicated network to do that. And so in our case, what we really focus on is what is the topology that they're going for? What is their IT policies allow? What type of devices are they connecting? And then in some cases, they might use hardware from us in the form of our Cascade gateways. But increasingly, they might just take software and deploy it on their existing devices or even a telematics gateway and the trucks that are moving around the country for their product.
Well, Cascade has a very Northwest feel it to it as a product name. What do they look like? And tell us a bit about, you know, what the features are of the hardware.
Yeah, I'll hold one up here for those that are actually seeing the video. It's, you know, this Cascade gateway here, it's about the size of a smoke detector, smaller than a Wi-Fi access point. And this particular model typically connects to the cloud, to the internet using Ethernet or LTE. Could use Wi-Fi as well, but most of our customers use it with Ethernet because you can power it with Ethernet as well. So you sort of get a two for one there. Mm-hmm. It basically works as a Bluetooth connectivity device for all the sensors in the network. So it can connect thousands of different endpoints, whether they're Wiliot tags or electronic shelf labels, leak detectors, motion detectors, air quality detectors. So it has edge compute on it that we run our software on, obviously out of the box, and that it's managed by a cloud application we have. So many customers will deploy this Cascade gateway in spaces where they are deploying these new IoT use cases. If they don't have Ethernet handy and they want to use LTE, that's an option as well.
Okay. And at its simplest level, it seems like the gateway is a way of converting Bluetooth traffic to internet protocol traffic. But you have some different connectivity options, and you kind of, it sounds like there are multiple, you can be a gateway for multiple things. So you could have an infrastructure that has electronic shelf labels, tags to do asset tracking or inventory tracking. And I'm assuming you can also be a gateway for condition monitoring sensors that are looking at refrigeration units or motors. How many different protocols or devices do you support? It seems like you've almost got like an app store for those different things that need a gateway.
Yeah, there's a whole library that we've worked with. We call them recipes. device recipes, sort of similar to device drivers or mm-hmm. apps. And a lot of it is based on the OEMs, the partners we've worked with that have deployed in customers, and they come to us with the device and say, hey, here's our sensor and the customer wants this. Can you help us onboard it? What are the value that we're bringing here is there's really two things. One is taking these kind of unmanaged BLE sensors and devices that don't have any real intelligence on them. They're just passing packets up into the cloud. And we're helping to throttle that, to make sure that it's not, you know, sending so much data that it adds a cost element into the cloud or over the mobile connection, if that's the case, that gets out of control. So we help optimize the amount of data that is being consumed by those IoT use cases. And then we also bring flexibility to have a variety of use cases. The economics of IoT, especially this commercial IoT space that we're in, don't typically just hinge on one use case. Really what customers want to do is be able to deploy this technology. Maybe they have a couple of use cases in mind right away, refrigerator monitoring, asset tracking, but they also want to see, you know, a future-proofed solution where they can add things, you know, down the road. And just by creating a new software recipe from Rigado and rolling that out into their installed base of gateways or other network infrastructure, get that value. So that's really what our special sauce is. We don't build sensors. We don't make the application that is, you know, displaying sensor data in front of the end users or anything like that. We're really a data on-ramp for those devices into the cloud. And then we make sure that it's all managed and IT ready for all the compliance things we know that those IT teams love to have.
So what does it take to write a recipe? Who writes it? How many do you have?
So typically, we often create the recipes on behalf of a customer because we're really good at it. We've been doing it a long time. There are tools that customers can make their own, and we've started to see some of that as we've gained momentum in the market. But they're pretty straightforward. You know, think of them as, you know, sort of configurations of behavior. You know, how often should we send data into the cloud for this device? When should we report certain health metrics, or what metrics should we alert on if there's a problem? So depending on the complexity of the device, a recipe could be very simple. It might just be temperature data. Mm-hmm. Or if it's something that has more complex configuration or we need to send data down to, like a electronic shelf label, can be more advanced. And in terms of how many we have, there are dozens and dozens of devices, different mm-hmm. flavors that we help customers install. So think of it on that order. The good thing is there's repeatability. Typically OEMs will have a family of devices and the recipes will be similar between them, but we can adjust them based on the make and model and what those things do.
What are they written in? You mentioned a container. What's that all about?
Oh, so the container is our software. We call it Edge Connect, which is this piece that actually sits on the edge and helps bring all this data, you know, from the edge into the cloud. And that runs in Docker, typically. So more and more you're seeing edge compute devices, things like Wi-Fi access points, telematics gateways, larger edge compute platforms that support Docker, where you could run a containerized software like our Edge Connect into. And we've done a number of those integrations. And that's great because you can take a very robust IT qualified solution like a Wi-Fi access point in the enterprise that is, you know, highly controlled, secure, and add this type of capability from Rigado without having to do a complete requalification of every aspect of the system. A lot of times they like to do that anyway, but Docker provides that kind of sandbox for us to run in. And we manage all that through a network management application we call Edge Direct, which is akin to how you would manage, say, a Wi-Fi network. You know, you have a list of devices and policies and profiles. You can upgrade them. You get health alerts. There's an API to send it to a single pane of glass upstream. And so, like I said, we've tried to bring an IT managed nature to IoT here with with our solution.
Very good. So what does the landscape look like in terms of Wi-Fi gateways and other devices that are supporting Docker? I mean, it seems like we're going from appliances that kind of had a monolithic firmware stack to kind of another compute platform that's available to kind of offload things and make things more flexible. Sounds like a good idea, but it also sounds like it might make things more expensive on the edge devices. Could you have a Docker container on a Wi-Fi access point, or do you have to have like a little computer that's acting as a controller? Where are those sitting?
I would say a lot of the big inflection point that we saw was Wi-Fi 6. You know, the Wi-Fi 6 standard and the updating of a lot of networks to Wi-Fi 6 over the last couple of years has brought in a new generation of hardware platforms that have tons of compute power and can host, you know, can run Docker and Docker images. And the infrastructure providers, the leaders in the Wi-Fi AP space wanted that so that they could try to turn that equipment into basically an app store, you know, something more than just Wi-Fi access and internet connectivity. So we're definitely riding that wave. Those deployments take time, right? It can take years to turn over all the infrastructure. And so that's why it's been a mix of companies that want to deploy dedicated Bluetooth gateways, for instance, dedicated networks, because it's just faster to get, you know, that hardware out there sometimes. But those that have updated and have access points that support Docker are definitely seeing the benefits. They see how easily they can just add this in software. And, you know, the cost to deploy a new network, a dedicated network, is quite high. If you have to run, you know, Ethernet or run power to an endpoint versus just using something that's already in the ceiling. So it's gradually happening, but I think Wi-Fi 6, most vendors seem to have embraced that with Wi-Fi 6, and most of them have low power wireless capabilities in the hardware already, typically Bluetooth Low Energy, which we like to use.
Yeah, that seems to be pretty ubiquitous now, the Bluetooth and the Wi-Fi access point, which is always a bit confusing when you're explaining this to people who aren't familiar with that. But so does Cisco, the big three, Cisco, Aruba, Juniper, do they all support Docker containers?
Yeah, in some form or fashion, they all do. It depends on the particular models, and I don't want to, you know, talk about their roadmaps necessarily, but they all have varying degrees of what they'll support, and also different policies in terms of how open it is. Right, it's one thing to have a framework that you can run code in; it's another thing to really try to become an application store and have a partnership program that allows for that. So what we find is that a lot of this tends to be heavily customer driven, meaning that in the end, it's the enterprise that either the retailer or whoever, you know, whoever's campus that device sits on, that ultimately is going to control what gets installed on their devices. And and so all those Wi-Fi vendors, they're at different stages of their evolution in terms of opening that up and inviting partners in. And so we have, you know, relationships with all of them. And we're in the early days right now of this unified IoT network. And as you are, finding the right fit for the use cases and the return on investment for deploying those solutions.
Yeah, I was amazed what a difference it makes having one of the largest customers on your side. I mean, I guess intuitively we all understand it's good to have a big customer asking for something, but I compare the months, even years spent on business development calls between us, a 250 person company, and these massive Wi-Fi access point vendors. And we had cordial conversations for years, but then you have one of the really big retailers pick up the phone and say, "We need you to improve your support for this vendor." And it, you know, what would take 5 years can take 5 minutes with the right phone call. It's incredible.
Yeah, I sympathize. I mean, I've been on that side of it. I was at Cisco and I've been at other networking companies and I understand, you know, how their priorities work as well. And it's nice to partner and do interesting things together, but at the end it's the customer that's going to win the day. And so I've experienced both sides of it. And the exciting thing is that there are enough catalysts now in the market to actually deploy these new type of smart technologies that we're getting, you know, customer traction behind it. And the vendor ecosystem is starting to come along. And that's what makes this really exciting.
So I do want to talk about the practicalities and what you see the landscape for some of these big deployments. What does that look like? Density of units and so forth. But before we go back there, one of the things that's been on my mind is where are we at in terms of standards around management? Because I remember way back when it was all about SNMP, Simple Network Management Protocol, and then there were a set of network management tools. And if you supported SNMP, you could fit into that framework and you could have interoperability between some of these big management consoles and other vendors. What's happened there and what are the standards that are people using today? Can you blend what you're doing in with a Cisco Spaces or how does it work?
Yeah, you can. A lot of it, you know, and I was there in the days of SNMP and then on the broadband side, it transitioned over TR069 and different standard ways of managing end devices. In the IoT space, it's certainly been more of a free-for-all. There hasn't really been an overarching standards body that's come in and says, here's how devices should work. Now, some of the major cloud vendors have stepped in and created, you know, their own version of that, right? You had AWS with Greengrass and Azure has created their own device, you know, device interoperability, device certification program. And we certainly jumped in on both of those because you want to be compliant and work in that ecosystem. And that's actually been very good for us. But I think a lot of it is actually just moved upstream, Steve. I mean, what we see is we have our device management system that talks to our Edge Connect software, our Cascade gateways, and it can see the sensor devices on their behalf. But more and more, a lot of that control is moving upstream into either, you know, vendor owned or a lot of times customer built solutions where they have their own, you know, control, their own operational OSS tools. And the standard has really become security. The InfoSec testing of your platform to make sure that it's not going to get compromised and make sure that you have an API that can get the data northbound into their system. So we spend less time worried about a standards body for an endpoint management system and more so about reliability and resiliency of our platform that is collecting data over a standard, say MQTT, but is also feeding information northbound. I think that's just how things have evolved. There's never going to be one real IoT management standard. You have to be flexible because in the meantime, customers have created a lot of their own management platforms and they just want to see it all in one place.
So do you interface with Cisco Spaces or is that essentially a competitor?
We've done work with Cisco Spaces. There's a lot in that portfolio for them. You know, they a lot of that is focused on, I would say, the enterprise Wi-Fi management and command and control of Wi-Fi client endpoints, and they've just started touching on IoT with it. But certainly, we've had customers that have used that solution and said, hey, we would like to, you know, co-locate that with IoT sensor data. And of course, the answer is of course. But one thing that we're mindful of and what we've seen is that large enterprises often have a multi-vendor management solution and access point solution. Nobody just buys one brand of access point because they want to have some vendor, you know, they want to have leverage, they want to have flexibility and de-risk and in certain certain geographies that may be advantageous to have one vendor over the other. So We've actually added capability to send the sensor data and the management data different places at the same time, or depending on what location it is, we can send it to one management system or the other. And so we call this, you know, kind of multi-pipeline capability. And it's been a good selling point for us because it allows you, again, to have that flexibility of vendors and whether it's on the access point side or on the cloud side.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Do you see BMC doing anything in this space? They've, you know, have a legacy of systems management.
Yeah. So some of those systems managers, there's a big move. I would say 2 or 3 years ago, we were in more in the smart building space, and in the smart building space, you had this kind of interesting intersection of a lot of wired technologies and building management systems, Johnson Controls and those, you know, Schneider, that had a lot of incumbency in the buildings, and we're starting to put sensors and actuators in on wired interfaces. And then companies like Rigado and other, you know, wireless companies were coming in and saying, actually, there's a different way to do this. You should consider this. And so we've actually done some integrations with those buildings control systems. Mm-hmm. But honestly, that market has moved more slowly. You know, there's a bigger picture issue, obviously, with corporate real estate and offices and where the investment is going in there versus what we see as a real big growth area, which is retail and grocery. So we're kind of skating to where we see the puck going right now.
I agree. That is where the puck's going. And there's just such challenges in terms of food safety, legislation compliance, FDA, FSMA 204, labor shortages, the need to have more effective omnichannel, better on-shelf availability. I mean, it gets to both the top and the bottom of the financial reporting, saving and making money. And you can do that if you have real-time visibility of inventory. And if you're going to do that, then you're going to have a lot of infrastructure in the store. So let's go back to that and talk about what does a deployment look like if I'm going to have a big box store, a Best Buy, a Walmart, or something like that. How many of your gateways am I going to likely need, and what does it look like to deploy them?
Yeah, it looks a lot like when you're deploying a Wi-Fi network. You know, you size it, you know, okay, here's the square footage of the space. Here's the type of space it is. Is it fairly open? Is it closed? How many floors is it? And Bluetooth low energy actually has a fairly similar range profile to Wi-Fi. You might not think so, because we think of Bluetooth audio in your headsets and, you know, you can't go very far, but Bluetooth low energy has, you know, fairly longer range, and it's a low bandwidth. You don't need as much bandwidth as say Wi-Fi. And so, you know, every a few thousand square feet will get covered by one Bluetooth gateway. And so, you know, depending on the size of the store, you could have a few hundred gateways deployed around to create really good coverage. That number goes up if you want to get into location services, because then you're talking about using multiple gateways to sort of triangulate the location of a device. And so you tend to add more for that. But for just typical coverage to see all the devices, you would look at it like a typical Wi-Fi access point, which is going back to the AP side of things, which is why it also makes sense to sometimes use that existing infrastructure. But as you mentioned, we have a deployment going on right now in a very large retailer, and it could be 200 gateways in the store, 250 gateways in the store, just to be safe.
Very interesting. And you touched on the mobile piece, which I think is fascinating. Up until now, the state of the art has been all about tracking the tractor, the front bit of the truck, and then the trailer. You know, where are all those trailers? But now we're talking about having real-time visibility about what's in the trailer, and it's on one hand, it's like that's a big step to start illuminating and seeing every single thing that's in the back of a trailer. But once you do that, you end up having this incredible platform that you have so many use cases. You know, misloads. Have I put the right thing on the right truck?
Right.
Am I taking the thing off at the right stop? If I'm delivering to multiple stores, multiple restaurants, then if I have store number one's order go to store number two, then the repercussions are like threefold. Store number one's customers are really unhappy. Store number one's manager is really unhappy because less revenue, lifetime value of customer. Store number two gets product that they don't know what to do with. So that's a bunch of expenses on manpower. And then they have probably wastage issues if it's perishable product. And then the distributor doesn't get paid because no one that ordered it got what they wanted. And so, and then we haven't even started talking about what's the condition of the things on the way from the DC to the store. And then you're, in some cases, your ability to start to measure the yield and utilization of the truck, and the fact that you can suddenly get ground truth as to is this truck running full or empty or half full. And in some cases, that can drive you to completely change the way you manage the transportation network. And that has implications in terms of smaller trucks, less trucks, shorter distances, less labor power, less fuel. So I really think it's one of these things where the initial case is kind of hard because everyone looks at the single app that's going to be the one that justifies putting the infrastructure in the truck. But once I see a kind of inflection point where suddenly all trailers will be connected and you'll be able to see everything in a trailer, and everyone will think, well, I can't believe there was a time when I couldn't see where the item was. And but I don't know. So I'm giving you a very positive view of this use case. Do you want to agree, disagree, qualify the picture I just painted?
Well, I certainly agree. I mean, we sort of take for granted that, you know, as consumers, we can now track a package from its source to destination, and, you know, when it gets delivered to our house. And bringing 10 more levels of complexity where you want to start to see not just where it is, but also what is the temperature of it? Has it been moved, accelerated in a fashion that could damage it? And what's the air quality been where that, if it's produce, where it's been the whole time? So we got into this years ago with vaccine cold chain monitoring. We had large pharma clients that were starting to use this technology to take, for instance, a COVID vaccine. Every point from production to the point where you receive that vaccine, it is monitoring multiple times a second to make sure that it doesn't go through temperature exclusion. So I kind of always felt like that was there, but what I was still impressed and surprised to see the first time where we actually had some of these large trailer trucks with a bunch of goods on them and location information and all the data from thousands of different pieces in those trucks coming into a dashboard that you could just sort of get a sense of health of it. And there's so much work that has to go into getting business value out of that data. But it's pretty exciting for us to be in the middle of that as a conduit for it to get online. And then also, you know, look at other aspects like the truck itself. You know, there's a whole telematics industry that looks into tire pressure and, you know, cab safety and all these different elements. But those things don't need to be completely distinguished from each other. They can all run in a unified network. And we're starting to see some interesting convergence there as well.
Yeah. Very good. Well, we've covered a lot. Anything that we haven't covered that we should have talked about in terms of what you're seeing in this Internet of Things landscape?
Well, I just wanted to add on to, you know, you mentioned, you listed about 7 or 8 things that are happening in the retail supply chain market that I think are just really fascinating. And, you know, at Regatta, we are not, as I mentioned, we don't build like the end-to-end solution for any one vertical. We play in hospitality, we play in pharmaceuticals. Retail and grocery has sort of pulled us in as a center of gravity because of those things you mentioned. There's so much going on there. But I'm really fascinated to see what happens in the next 8 to 10 months as some of these deployments actually start. And there's, particularly in grocery, there's just so much happening there. So much focus on food waste, so much focus on prices, right? Even if you look at, you know, people's perception of the economy, so much of it comes down to, you know, the price of milk that they buy, and that gets impacted by how much waste occurs. So it's really exciting for us. Our team is really energized by this. And, you know, you and William have done a lot of work to bring this to the forefront. There's some exciting technology there. And we're excited to be a part of that.
Yeah, well, it definitely takes an ecosystem. And what you folks do is a really important part of that ecosystem. You know, from my perspective, the bit that is still very much up in the air is the application side of it, in my opinion, because a lot of the deployments we're doing are with the very largest, most sophisticated companies who essentially write their own software. And if they don't have the software, they often just buy the company that, because it's cheaper to buy the company than have the completely maxed out, ridiculously large software as a service charge that they would get for the scale that they're at. And, you know, that's great. But I don't think, I am not seeing the packaged enterprise applications that are really ready to scale this to beyond the tier zero, the very top tier, to the tier one and the tier two. And I think that for me, one, because it's all, at the end of the day, it's all about apps. We can have the best network, the best infrastructure, the best smart tags, but until you have apps, then it's very difficult to simply unlock the value. And in my opinion, the first movers there around food safety. So that's an area that we've focused on. You have the,
it's a great point, Steve. I mean, for a while, I feel the IoT industry was really centered around these builder platforms, right? You can here's an IoT platform. You can go in, you can create your dashboard, you can, you know, you set up a data endpoint, and here you go. You've got a proof of concept. You've got a pilot ready in a couple of days. And we were a part of that motion, but a lot of them stall out at the proof of concept because those applications don't really scale that well. And the people building them were not people that manage a grocery store day to day, for example, or manage a warehouse or a construction site. And so there's definitely been, I think, it's sort of all dressed up, not yet ready to go for some of the data that's coming in and the sensors. But we need the applications and companies that can come in. And that's really what I look for when I go to some of these shows like NRF and Grocery Shop, is I'm always curious to see who's actually building the applications that are going to leverage this. And certainly a lot has been made about AI and how that's going to impact that. I think that there's an interesting convergence between IoT and AI, obviously, that we could probably spend a whole nother show on. But I agree, you know, we're trying to do our part, which is be that data on-ramp and make it easier for customers to get those things ready. But, you know, someone has to be there to actually take that data and turn it into some business value.
Yeah, I think it's fascinating. And my thought is some of those food safety apps may end up having a lead because they have a way of monetizing something. Their apps are being driven by legislation. And today it's about tracking shipping events, receiving and shipping events to satisfy the FDA. But in doing that, they then also have a platform that can potentially report on the cold chain, which is about reducing waste. And you know, maybe they can layer on other applications. And much of the rest of the application industry is not down at the, certainly not down at the item level or even the case level. They're tracking at the pallet level. So I think there's an opportunity for the smart app developers to build a position of strength and then land and expand out before the monolithic giants, the SAPs and the Oracles, get there. But who knows? Maybe one of them is watching this show and has a project that's going to be ready to go to
give us a call, right?
Yeah.
We're happy to help.
Very good. Well, Steve, thanks for this. I think we know a lot more about your product, but beyond that, the landscape of ambient Internet of Things, which is seeing this huge growth. And I feel like we just finished the main course, and next bit of our conversation is dessert, which Dirty Secret we've already recorded. So thanks so much for a really interesting discussion, and we'll move on to the next chapter.
Sounds great. Thanks, Steve.
So Steve, you're based in Portland, Oregon, one of my favorite cities. I lived there for 10 years, started off just off of the Pearl District on Flanders.
Yeah, great area.
Where are your offices based?
We're on the other side of the river, just on the east side, sort of near the convention center, the Moda Center. And I myself also in Southeast, but you know, Portland's a pretty small town. You can almost walk around the whole thing in the afternoon, so it's pretty easy to navigate.
That's what I love about it. It is small enough to be accessible, but big enough to be really interesting and have all those fun neighborhoods. So what's the state of the city these days? It's had a lot of bad publicity. Every time I've gone there, then there's been issues, but I still love it. Where is it in the upswing, downswing, do you think, as far as the growth of high tech and the livability that was that part of that magnet for people coming to the city to set up startups when they were kind of in Bay Area recovery mode?
Yeah, it certainly isn't where it was, say, 5 or 6 years ago, where Oregon was one of the most moved to states in the country for a couple of years. And a lot of friends and colleagues were moving up here, low cost of living, high quality of life. And, that all changed, given some changes to the Oregon tax code on corporations, and the pandemic and things really kind of took some of the wind out of the sails. And where at one point, Portland itself, downtown Portland, was a recruiting tool for companies. If you had an office in downtown Portland, you would recruit off of that. And now as it ebbs and flows, now it's kind of out towards the suburbs where there's more space. It's easier to put in a manufacturing or a data center, something like that. And some of the challenges with the downtown scene and retail have really hit. So it's a bit of a downswing. I think eventually, hopefully it'll come back as Portland often has in the past. And in terms of startups, there are certainly, still a good startup culture here in Portland. Companies doing interesting things. I like to include Regatto in that conversation. And there's always, a need for talent. And that's, what we're always looking for. And companies that are maybe larger entities that want a satellite development center or want to, pick up a company that's doing something interesting, still look to Portland, I think.
Yeah, I have a huge amount of respect and affection for that city. So let's get into the music choice, always the hardest part for our guests.
Sure.
What were the three songs that you chose and why?
Yeah, so my three songs. I'm going to go through a couple of different eras. Actually, so as growing up in the 80s, I wanted to start with something from that era as a kid. Loved the movie Back to the Future, and the hit song from Huey Lewis and the News, Power of Love, came out, you know, sort of a typical 80s song with a classic 80s movie. A lot of fun, great way to kick off a movie. And Huey Lewis, really cool guy by all accounts. So wanted to start off with something fun like that.
I love that. And that DeLorean is still iconic. I saw it when I was at Universal Studios about two weeks ago. And I feel like it's getting a second life through the Tesla Cybertruck. It's essentially the DeLorean only on steroids. So I'm very glad that you had an 80s track there. What's your second one?
Okay, so second, let's go back a little bit. And I know you've had folks on, you know, a lot of good Beatles mentions. I love the Beatles, love British Invasion, a lot of those bands. But I wanted to counterbalance that with something from the Beach Boys. So we'll start, you know, we'll go in with the Beach Boys and I Get Around, which is, you know, one of their big hits from the 60s. And I love the sound, love the harmonies. It's another one that's, you know, pretty catchy and also sort of kicked off a little bit of a rivalry between the Beatles and the Beach Boys. I think it's mostly friendly, but I thought it'd be nice to balance that out a little bit. It just, every time that song or a song from those albums comes out, it just kind of feels like summertime on the West Coast. And so I wanted to pick that one.
Yeah, that rivalry was real by all accounts. And it kind of, you know, that creative competition, it's a bit like the creative competition that we have in our industry. I certainly look at what other folks are doing and it inspires me and drives me to raise our game. So very good. And number three?
Number three will go more recent and something I consulted my kids on, which is Panic at the Disco, 9 in the Afternoon. And I really, you know, this is from kind of the mid 2000s, but they, you know, a hit they had, which I actually took my daughter to her first concert a couple of years ago, their final tour. They played the song, you know, again, another catchy one, probably made famous in the Rock Band video game. People were playing that all the time. Modest hit on the radio, just a good song, fun song. And, you know, you always have those memories of taking your kid to their first concert and seeing their reaction to live music and how, you know, how it just enthralls them. And so decided to go with that.
I have deep in my memory banks. I took my youngest son, Sam, to a Depeche Mode concert up in LA, and we were the only people that weren't wearing black leather. And he was so young that he actually fell asleep in the middle of an incredibly noisy track, but it's been a bonding experience for us as well. So I completely get why you chose that one too. Well, those are three great choices. Steve, thanks very much for those. And thanks so much for coming onto the show.
Steve, thanks for having me on. It was a lot of fun. Be in touch.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that conversation as much as I did. I always think these podcasts are good when I feel like I could sit down with our guest with a martini and a nice meal and continue the conversation. And that's definitely the case here. I want to thank Aaron Hammock for editing the episode. And a thanks and farewell to Brooke Ellsworth, our intrepid intern who has done a lot to help me in organizing the distribution of these. Brooke's gone back to finish her college, and we wish her well and thank her. And most of all, we thank you. I really, really appreciate it. Your interest, loyalty, engagement, especially if you've gone this far in the podcast, is something that I really value. And I hope you'll continue to support us with your active listening. Until next time, be safe.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.